Tonight on Life on the Rock,
we have Father Daniel Brandenburg, Part 1, I'll Give a Reflection,
and much more.
Tonight on Life on the Rock, we have Father Daniel Brandenburg, Legion of Christ. And he's written a book called Leadership Like No Other, What Secular Leadership Models Reveal About Jesus. And this is a first of two shows we're going to do with him. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about his own vocation and the importance of Pope John Paul II as we enter into this topic and discussion. We're now going to a reflection with Father Mark.
We're here in San Francisco, just in front of the Golden Gate Bridge. It's an area of great recreation, of all this great high technology. We see all these bicyclists pedaling around up here in these beautiful coastal mountains and things. You know, we see so many young adults here working and maybe having great jobs and kind of the height of their powers. You know, it's kind of exciting to see that, you know, them living life large and full. But you know, sometimes we can get distracted from the gospel. We can take our eye off the ball. We can take, you know, that relationship with Jesus can lose focus with so many opportunities, you know, that might be before us. You know, Revelation 3:20 says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him and he with me." That table fellowship, you know, especially in the Bible, is so meaningful. It speaks of the relationship, the friendship, the camaraderie that Jesus wants to have with us. He wants to know everything about us. And he's standing at the door and knocking. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, you know, he will come in and dine with us. Do we hear his voice? Are we responding to that? He longs to have this relationship. Think of the parable with the father and the prodigal son. The father doesn't wait for him to come and knock on the door. He runs to meet him when he sees him at a distance. Jesus instructing his disciples to prepare the Passover. He sat at table, the apostles with him. He said to them, "I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer." That he wants to share the Eucharist with us, his flesh and blood, to transform us. Do we hear this call? Are we responding? Are we focused on the Lord?
Father Daniel, welcome to Life on the Rock.
Thank you, Brother John. It's great to be here.
You are a member of the Legionaries of Christ, and you've done some programming with EWTN, but I don't know if you've ever been on Life on the Rock before.
No, this is my first time. You know, I got to see it several times growing up as a young man, as a seminarian, but this is the first time I'm actually on this show. So,
great, and we have an interesting show because you've written a book called Leader Like No Other, and it's an interesting concept because you go into kind of the secular leadership and. But how to bring Christ into that, into the world, you know, for a lot of people that are working just a corporate job or maybe in a school or something like that, you know, how to bring the Christ spirit into where maybe there isn't a Christ spirit. And but there's a very interesting concept that we'll get into, but you also have a very interesting story yourself because before the show, you were telling me you joined religious life at the age of 17.
That's right.
And I think we want to hear a little bit more about that, just your own kind of vocation story.
Happy to share that. You know, God has a unique calling for each one of us. And from a young age, I felt, you know, maybe God was calling me to the priesthood. I ran away from that a little bit when I hit 11, 12 years old, when I discovered that girls didn't have cooties anymore.
Okay, yeah.
Up until that point, they all had cooties, and I was like, nah, keep away from them. But then I discovered I liked girls, and girls liked me, and I was like, maybe I'll become a deacon. So for most of my high school years, I was kind of running away from that call to the priesthood. I dated, played sports, and got involved in lots of other activities. But every time I would pray or spend some time in adoration, that little voice would come back like, you know, I'm calling you. And I would just kind of stuff it down, push it away. But as I developed a little bit more in my prayer life, I went to the Steubenville Youth Conferences throughout high school each summer, and they would encourage us to develop a prayer life. So I started praying more on my own, daily devotional, daily meditation. Sometimes I would go to adoration, sometimes go to weekday mass. And in those times of prayer, the call of the priesthood would deepen. Mm. And so by the end of my junior year of high school, I was like, this had really come to a head. And I was like, Lord, I really feel like you're calling me and that I should be doing something to look into this. So I had gone to visit the seminary of my diocese, talked to the vocation director of my diocese, talked with my parish priest, who was now retired at this point. And I had explained a little bit what was going on inside of me. It was strange. I couldn't figure it out. I felt that God was calling me to the priesthood, but at the same time, I didn't really feel called to do what my parish priest was doing. And I couldn't understand that really well.
Yeah.
And so this very astute and holy diocesan priest said, well, maybe God's calling you to religious life. I said, well, what does that mean? And I had met Franciscans at the University of Steubenville. I knew things about the Jesuits because I read about the saints. I knew some of the history in the church, of course, but I hadn't experienced it firsthand because in my diocese of Sioux City, Iowa, growing up, there were no men religious that I knew of. And so when he said that, I was like, okay, well, let me look into that. Mm-hmm. He gave me a catalog, which was the Vision magazine. I don't know if you've ever seen that. And I flipped through it and I looked for all the different religious orders that looked like they were solid, that they were faithful to the Holy Father, that had a great devotion to the Eucharist and love for Mary. And I sent off for information from a bunch of those groups.
Oh.
And that's how I started getting information. This was before the internet was really extensive at all.
Yeah.
And so I got information back from different
probably
religious
got a
orders. Actually, I probably got like 7 or 8 different religious orders that wrote to me and explained what they were doing.
Yeah.
But it was the letter from the Legionaries of Christ that really caught my attention. And it just explained 3 simple things. It talked about the spirituality, Christ-centered, mm-hmm. love for our Lord in the Eucharist, love for the Blessed Virgin Mary, and love for the church. It talked about the formation, that it was challenging, 12 to 15 years of formation. Wow. You got to learn foreign languages, study in Rome. I like challenges, so that was kind of drawing for me. And the third was the mission of the Legionaries of Christ, which was to evangelize in today's world, help lay people to live out their vocation to holiness and apostolate in the world. And as I read through all of that, I just felt this resonance inside. And I remember taking the letter and showing it to my mom almost in tears and saying, Mom, I think this is where God's calling me.
It just kind of clicked.
Yeah. And so a few months later, fast forward, I visited the novitiate of the Legionaries of Christ in the summer of 1993, right before going out to World Youth Day in mm-hmm. Denver. And I felt right at home right away. So I asked my parents for permission to enter into the novitiate that fall. Yeah. And to their credit, they gave me permission. They had never actually been to visit the seminaries. They weren't really sure about it. So they actually came out with me to Connecticut, to our novitiate in Cheshire, Connecticut. They visited for 45 minutes, talked with the priests, and then they said, this is a good place, you can stay. And then they drove away.
In your experience at World Youth Day, you also were able to witness Pope John Paul II, the Great, who's a tremendous leader in the church.
Definitely, huge
really
blessing for the
in
church.
The world. Can you talk a little bit about maybe that experience or maybe his impact of leadership on your life?
Mm. Oh gosh, there's so many different facets of that. I think that first experience of John Paul II in person, which was at World Youth Day, was just kind of mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. For me, that was the largest gathering I'd ever seen of young people and people expressing their Catholic faith in a public setting. I'd been to the Steubenville conferences in high school, which were awesome, mind-blowing for me, coming from a small town in Iowa and seeing thousands of other young people who were loving their Catholic faith. But then to go to World Youth Day see like a million people, literally, who were going to Mass and praising God, and to see John Paul II arrive in a helicopter, it was mind-blowing for a young person.
This is it.
And then later on, when I had the opportunity to study in Rome, I was there for a total of 8 years. I had the opportunity to meet 3 different occasions, John Paul II, when I served Mass for him for the opening of the Jubilee year, for a Christmas Day celebration, and once for Good Friday.
Yeah. And a lot.
it was just awesome. It's one of those things where you think of all the awesome things you're going to say to John Paul II, and then you just stumble over you can't say anything.
I think it's and you made him in a unique time in his life because you know, he was becoming more frail.
That's right.
And but he was a man of great perseverance and just longevity.
I think that was one of the most remarkable things about John Paul II is that as he declined in health, you know, he continued to serve. Mm-hmm. And that for me was a great example. And so many priests and religious that I've met over the years who their greatest moments of fruitfulness in their life isn't necessarily from their power, their ability to speak or to do great things, but it's through their service and that total gift of themselves. And I had a chance to experience that myself. 6 years ago, I was diagnosed, well, almost 7 years ago, I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma cancer and almost died. And I had to step back from ministry for almost an entire year where I was recovering, going through cancer treatments and a bone marrow transplant. And that was the most fruitful year of my life.
Really?
Most fruitful experience of my priestly ministry, which is strange to say because I couldn't preach. I didn't have the stamina to even hear confessions.
Wow.
I was not doing any ministry, but I was uniting all my suffering to Christ. And I was praying and interceding for people. And I saw so many graces come from that period. And interiorly, such a union with the Lord because I was offering that to Him. And sometimes, almost nostalgically, I think back to that time when I was united with the Lord. And I was like, oh, I don't want to go back. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to go back to having cancer and that suffering. But that intimacy with the Lord and that fruitfulness in my ministry, it was extraordinary. And I think that's what we saw in the life of John Paul II.
Yeah. Well, we have to go to a break, but whenever we come back, let's get more into this book.
Great.
Father Daniel, your background is in education, but how did you get into the role of leadership? What kind of drew you into that?
That's a great question, Brother John. So I've always been fascinated by leadership and the impact that individuals can have on the course of history and the course of human events. I've always loved war stories or hero stories, and I love history. And so when it came time for me to kind of determine where I wanted to study for a doctorate, I looked at the interdisciplinary leadership program through Creighton University, and I was just fascinated by the curriculum that they were offering because it was education degree, it's a doctorate in education, but with a real focus on leadership studies.
Wow.
So I've read lots of leadership books over the years, and I've been in different leadership roles within my religious order, the Legionaries of Christ. And so an opportunity to study that at a deeper level was really fascinating. And so I started those studies, and ended up doing my doctoral dissertation on the correlation between the leadership of Catholic bishops, the leadership styles of Catholic bishops in the United States, and the health of their diocese.
Oh.
I mean, we could have a whole nother discussion just on that. It was fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
And just as a little side note, last year, I have a priest friend in Rome, so I asked him to give a copy of my doctoral dissertation to the head of the dicastery for bishops, Cardinal Prevost.
Oh.
So he hand-delivered a copy of my dissertation to him, and he, you know, Cardinal looked at it, and, well, that's not Pope Leo. So we have a
interesting
little bit of a connection there.
So there's different styles. I never really even thought about that.
Yes.
But what would be kind of some of the main focuses? Is it like liturgy or education or...
I think there's a lot of different focuses that bishops will take, but a lot of it, when we talk about leadership styles, we're talking about their way of addressing issues and how they think about their leadership. And in the current history, where we are in a historical period in the United States, the leadership style that most pastors of parishes imbibe and live is somewhat of a conflict avoidance. Not rock the boat, let's keep everyone happy so we can keep the money coming in, which is actually what we would call in the leadership literature laissez-faire, which is the worst form of leadership.
Okay.
It's an abdication from leadership. It's just letting things kind of run their course and not upsetting anyone, which is not a very effective form of leadership. And so, unfortunately, that's what, you know, if parish priests are living that type of leadership, then that tends to rise up to bishops. And we see historical periods in the history of the church. For example, in the founding of our country, we had a lot of pioneer priests.
Yeah.
There were no churches, there were no schools. And so priests would go out and bishops would go out, and you have an incredible bishops in the early history of the United States, who are, some of them are saints now, who had to go out and start things. And it was just a, you know, let's make things happen, entrepreneurial spirit. Now we're in a different period in the history of the church where we've got a lot of institutions and we've moved into a preservation mode.
Yeah.
Let's not get sued.
Things kind of settle, you know?
Yeah. And that's where we've gotten into a period in the history of the church where it can actually be somewhat detrimental. Yeah. Where you're focused on the wrong things. You're no longer focused on evangelizing and how do we engage the culture, but it becomes a little bit too inwardly focused on how do we preserve what we have. And that's unfortunate because we need to break out of that mold. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of really courageous bishops who are trying to do that. I had an opportunity to present some of my doctoral research to a group of bishops who were attending a course on how do we become more evangelizing in our diocese. And it was beautiful to see those bishops really striving to implement that and to heed the call of our Lord to go out to the world and not just go into our little world and preserve.
And it's interesting because I think, things get maybe a little bit stagnant.
That's can certainly happen.
Because I read somewhere, just even like the growth of the church, even whenever there's friction, that can actually be used for the better.
Without a doubt.
It's just almost like when things become too common or familiar with us, things kind of level off.
You lose the dynamism.
Yeah, you kind of lose that drive.
Right.
And I think even in my own vocation, or you think like a vocation, in marriage, when you're 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, things become kind of routine, so to speak. You know, that sense of wonder or adventure or something, it can kind of be lost. But there's ways to exercise our faith. We grow out of that,
And there's, definitely,
I think, too, a daily aspect of renewal. That's a big aspect.
Well, you're touching on the key, Brother John. And if we're not renewing ourselves every day and allowing the Lord to renew us in prayer and in deep prayer, then we stagnate. And that's where the holiness is what drives the history of the church. The more that we're united to Christ, the more we see a flourishing of the life of the church.
And one of the things I thought was interesting about kind of the concept of the book itself, especially in your studies of working with leadership, is that there's many great leaders, teachers, coaches, and everything. But there's hardly ever a mention of Christ, who is a religious figure, but in one sense, like, he is like the greatest leader, but there's almost nothing. It's just silence, you know.
You can find books here and there that will talk about the leadership of Christ, but they don't tend to be the academic tomes. They tend to be more like fringe. Here's a spiritual writer or a religious writer here and there. But in the academic literature, there's very little about Jesus Christ. And in my 4 years of doctoral studies on leadership, there was not a single reference to Jesus Christ.
Wow.
We looked at all different types of leaders from the military or civic or civil rights. We even had to read something from a witch. It's bizarre.
Wow.
But no mention of Jesus Christ. And so it was actually after my doctoral studies, when I had finished, I was doing a sabbatical for 2 months with some other fellow priests down in Mexico. And they were asking me about my doctoral studies. And it dawned on me that not once had we talked about Jesus Christ. And arguably, he's the greatest leader in the history of the world. And you look at it, for example, on I include this in the book, on 8 different points, he's arguably the greatest leader in the history of the church, of the world, because no one has ever had more followers than Jesus Christ.
Right.
No one has had the lasting power. No one has the caliber of people who are ready to lay down their lives as martyrs for him. So on the memory that's kept of our Lord, his words have not been translated. No other leader has had their words translated like the words of Jesus. And so objectively, he is the greatest leader in the history of the world, and yet academia has ignored him.
Yeah.
So why? That
is
a big question that I then set out to
answer. That's a major question. But unfortunately, we've run out of time on this show. But the good news is that we have another show with you. So
awesome.
We'll be able to dive more into it. So Father, thank you for being on Life on the Rock.
Great to be with you, Brother John.
Thank you. I really enjoyed my discussion with Father Daniel, and one of the things that really kind of struck out to me was actually early on was his openness to his vocation, being really receptive to God's grace and that calling. And of course, if you're called to the priesthood or the religious life or even marriage, you're called to be a leader. There's many ways that we can exercise leadership and our vocations, but we have to be open to that inspiration and that grace that God really seeks to give to us that we can grow and flourish, really inspire others. But I think it's a very important discussion to bring as many of us as we grow up or in the world currently, as we're working a job or teaching in a school or part of an organization, is that we have to be Christ-minded and we have to think like Christ and become Christ to others. And a lot of times in the secular world, there's an absence of that that we need to fill and bring that true Christian spirit of faith, of hope, of charity into the world. And ultimately, that's what's going to impact and change the world is by our witness to the faith. And so we have to be strong and courageous and oftentimes bold as those who have walked the faith before us. And we have to take into that consideration that God is calling us to great heights. So God bless. The star lives inside my heart. Oh my God, you chose me. You chose me. And forever show me. My life is part of your plan. My name is called in your hands. You made me right where I am. Your love won't let me go. Here on your promise I stand. I stand. You finish what you began.
But I know who holds my future. I don't know what my future holds, but I know who holds my future. There's never a day or an hour, a minute, oh, no. Time in my life when you haven't been in it. I don't know what my future holds, but I know you hold it. My life is part of your plan. My name is called in your hands. Your love won't let me go.